How do you build a recruiting process built to scale? This is probably one of the most fundamental questions that most recruiting leaders have to ask themselves, particularly in a startup world. How do you build a recruiting function that is equipped and able to 2x an organization, 5x, 10x? What are the components that you need to have in place in order to do that thoughtfully and successfully, so that as the organization continues to grow and as your rec load continues to expand, you can handle that added stress on your recruiting engine? I'm going to dive into that in this podcast after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. So this podcast was originally inspired by a Forbes post with the same title that really dug into how to build a recruiting engine built for scale. And for me, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do in this episode is to stress that sometimes simplicity and foundational work, though not always sexy and snazzy and there's no AI in it, it is really what is necessary to build a solid foundation. We can easily get caught up in over-engineering things in HR and recruiting, and an interview process is certainly no exception to that. So I tend to, you know, start with stripping things down to a more basic foundation and then build on that both as needed and as additive. But the simpler you can make your recruiting process, the more easy you can make it for your team to follow, I think the more success you'll end up having. And so when you follow the growth curve of organizations, I think particularly startups and venture-backed companies, you obviously have different needs at different stages of growth. And at an early stage, when you are a founder and you're really just starting to scale your organization, I think a lot of that hiring tends to be phone a friend. Right? It's your network. It's people you've worked with in the past. It's people that you went to school with. It's people that are active in your, you know, dev communities. And I would say in many organizations, your first 50 or so hires are going to be made through that network. You know, there's another topic for another podcast around the difficulties of that and the fact that it does create homogeneous environments that do tend to lack diversity. You likely may not have a recruiter at that stage. You may not even have HR at that stage before you hit 50 people. Or maybe you have one person and it's a department of one and the person's really kind of plugging the dam across the organization, trying to be impactful in a broad range of areas and struggling to do so because they don't have the cycles and the bandwidth to really go deep in any of those areas. One key element when you are at this stage and you're really at an early, early in your growth curve is, as difficult as it may be, particularly if you don't have a recruiter and obviously you don't have a lot of budget for agencies, you really want to do what you can to diversify your team at that early stage. There's been lots of studies that talk about the challenge of embedding diversity in an organization once you've hit a critical mass that tends to be uniform in experience and background. So if you can work hard to diversify that early team, it's going to allow you, it's going to pay huge dividends down the road. It's going to allow you to build a more diverse organization naturally as you continue to scale and grow. So back to the scale element, you know, when you're first starting to recruit, obviously your process lacks consistency, it lacks rigor, it lacks structure. There's often no clear alignment on requirements, job requirements, what you need to hire, when you need to hire it, feedback. Everything is urgent. So you're kind of in crunch mode to just bring on bodies at that early stage. And so I think you have to fight against that urge, particularly early on, and create some basic processes in place that will allow you to scale. And one of those would be things like a rec approval process. So let's say you get beyond that those first 50 hires. Now, you know, you have somebody in a dedicated recruiting role. Maybe you have a couple people if you're, you know, 2 or 3x beyond 50, and you're now thinking thoughtfully about recruiting. Well, you want to make sure if at that point, if you don't have a kind of requisition approval process is part of your foundation, that's a real challenge. Your recruiting bandwidth is limited. Your recruiting cycles are limited. And so you don't want your recruiters out there chasing talent that is actually not built to plan. It is actually not aligned with the hiring goals that you have at that time. And so if they're just getting direction from hiring managers saying, yeah, I need, you know, 3 DevOps people, or I need a product person or a designer, but there's no kind of review and rec approval process that validates that those are actually part of the plan, your recruiter may be out spinning their wheels trying to find that talent, and that may end up getting pulled before they bring somebody in. And so that's a huge missed opportunity. It's a lot of wasted hours, a lot of wasted time. So building that rec approval process in early, even if it's a very lightweight process, which it probably should be at that stage, that's going to make a huge difference down the road as you scale. And it's going to ensure that your recruiting resources are focused where they can be the most impactful and where your business really needs them. Another element that's really important, particularly at that early stage, is embedding a recruiting mindset across the entire organization, right? When you're a early stage company and you're beginning to scale, recruiting is one of the most important things that's going to happen, and one of the most important determining factors as to whether you're going to be successful or not as a business or as a product or as a service. So whatever you can do to kind of embed that mindset that everybody is a recruiter, I think will help further the odds of you being successful in building that team. And the recruiter actually plays a big role in this too. As a recruiter, you've got to make sure that you're making it really easy for your team to know what you're hiring for, what is urgent, how can they refer people, you know, and what great talent looks like beyond the job spec. Hopefully your job specs are, that's another topic for another podcast, but, you know, hopefully your job descriptions are actually pretty tight, and they do a good job of articulating the experience and the background and the qualifications that talent really needs to be successful in that role. So assume you have all of those things in place. Make sure that your team knows what they're looking for, not just the kind of core requirements of a job description, but what somebody that would really excel there looks like, what kind of background they have, what kind of competencies will be additive to the organization and to the team. Another piece that's really essential at this point for recruiters is, as you're trying to build this this kind of environment and this culture where everybody feels that they own a piece of recruiting, and you're driving referrals, hopefully from them, you're being thoughtful and kind of hitting your team up for referrals, you've got to make sure that you're communicating regularly with both the people being referred and the referrer, right? Especially at that early stage, because if people think that they're referring their friends into a black hole and recruiting is not getting back to them, they're probably going to stop, and you don't want them to stop. So make sure that you're providing open lines of communication, that you're, if anything, you're overcompensating a bit, so that people, you know when they refer someone to you, you're going to be on it. You're going to kind of, you know, handle them quickly. You're going to follow up quickly, but you're also going to keep the referrer in the loop. I think that's really important. So now you're getting into the interview stage and you're starting to prepare that. I think one of the things that's really important for recruiting at this stage is to really make sure that all of the stakeholders in the interview process have a clear understanding of the role, the target profile, the projects they're going to be working on, even, you know, kind of skill deficiencies within the team that might be able to be shored up in this hire. One of the quickest ways to sabotage an interview process is to basically just send out the job spec and say, yep, here it is. Here, you know, 5 people across 3 different teams. We just expect you're going to be able to know what to interview for, what to look for, and help us make sure we make the right decision. Yeah, that doesn't work. And if you're a recruiter, and you've worked in that environment, you can probably vouch for that fact that you really need to have some structure. So bring everybody together, you know, have the recruiter and or the hiring manager lead the discussion, talk clearly about what they're going to be doing, what they're going to be working on, skills and background they need to have. And then I would recommend even structuring the interview process further. So don't just say, hey, what'd you think about this person? Talk about, hey, look, I want you to probe this competency. I want you to probe this skill set. I want you to probe how they might work in this kind of environment, whatever environment you may have, so that the conversations are structured, they don't overlap. There's probably no recruiter that hasn't had a situation where they've talked to a candidate at the end of the interview process and the candidate's just like, I just kind of talked to everybody. I wasn't really clear on, you know, it was just a conversation, and or I had three of the same conversations with three of the same people. You know, you don't need me to tell you that that's bad. That's bad candidate experience. It doesn't look good on the organization. And so structure that. Make sure everybody has a clear role in the interview process. And I think that that's a really important element so that you're not leaving a bad impression on candidates. Having these conversations before interviews kick off also allows you to identify any disconnects between teams. You know, a lot of the roles you're going to be hiring will be working cross-functionally, and they're probably going to have interview teams that are cross-functional. And some of those teams may have a different expectation about what's really needed in that role. So having these kickoff meetings allows everybody to come together, hash out those differences, make sure you've got alignment, and that's going to, you know, go a huge way in making sure that you're able to keep an efficient interview process. I think getting back to efficiency, one of the really important things about interviewing, particularly if you're recruiting in the Valley or other competitive markets, is speed, right? You want to try to optimize your process so that you're ideally only bringing somebody on site once. If you need to build a cascading interview schedule so that if you know they end up not doing well in kind of code evaluations and things like that, you can end the interview early. But hopefully you've vetted those things up front. And so at that point, you know, the kind of core qualifications have already been validated. But you don't want to be bringing that person in for multiple rounds. A, it's bad candidate experience. These are people that are likely working. It's hard to leave a job. It's hard to go interview. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. It's stressful. So you want to try to make that happen once. The other piece is if they're interviewing with you, chances are they're interviewing with other companies. And if you have a multi-stage on-site interview process and you're competing against another equally compelling company that has one, who has that advantage, right? Speed wins. So you want to build a process that allows you to move thoughtfully, of course, but also move very quickly. So when you're getting into interview feedback, that's another piece that when you want to build a recruiting engine that's built for scale, you know, feedback process, there's no silver bullet here, and every organization has a different approach to how they gather feedback from interviews. And so, you know, this recommendation is mine based on my own experience. I'm certainly not qualifying it as this is absolutely the right experience. I think there's a lot of subjectivity that comes into play, but in generally, this is how I recommend approaching gathering feedback from interviews. Having some level of scorecard in your interview process and your interview feedback evaluations that allows you to really measure consistently feedback across different variables, I think is really important. It helps address biases that everybody has and tends to creep up in the interview process. It's a way to identify that. You can identify trends and how people are providing feedback on candidates. But it also allows a degree of benchmarking candidate over candidate. And I think that gets really important, particularly as you scale. You know, a lot of the early stage hiring is based on gut decisions because you don't have that process. I like this person. I connected with this person. This person seems smart. They had good ideas. Those things are all great, but that approach doesn't scale. And so building in a scorecard approach early in process helps set you up for success as you continue to grow. I'm also a big fan of live feedback huddles at the end of an interview. You know, you want to get that written feedback. I generally recommend get that first so that it's unbiased by other members of the interview team, but then bring everybody together. You know, this is, you don't necessarily have to have unanimous decisions on hiring. Some people choose to do that. That's fine. It's not required. But what this does do is it allows you to have that live discussion where everybody's in the room. Everybody's able to talk about things they liked. We're able to talk about things they concerned. Concerns they may have, and also get different perspectives that may help reframe how somebody viewed a particular aspect of that interview process. So I think those live feedback sessions are really healthy and helpful for, you know, debate around the right candidate, but it also creates a sense of shared ownership around that hiring decision, which I think is really important for that new hire's success. And it's also something that, you know, that gets a little difficult to scale over time. You're doing a lot of hiring to have those huddles. You want to try to group those. So ideally you can talk about a few candidates in each meeting, but I think it's a valuable practice to put in place early in your recruiting process. So those are a few foundational elements that I think if you put in place early as a recruiting leader and as a recruiting function, it's going to pay huge dividends for you as you continue to grow. It gives you that underlying foundation and that structure that you can add on to as you get bigger and as you bring more people in. So this is a really important topic that I definitely plan on investing more time in future episodes, and most importantly, interviewing TA leaders out there. They're doing a really good job of this and they're willing to kind of share some of the tips and hacks and hard-earned scars they've earned along the way. So that is it for this episode. I am actually going to be on hiatus for the next 2 weeks. So I'll be stepping away for the first half of April. There'll be no new shows, but I will be back the second half of April. And we'll get back to our regular, a weekly scheduled programming when I'm back. So until then, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.